This land is your land. This land is my land. From California to the New York Island. From the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters. This land was made for you.
Good evening. It's Tuesday, October 27th, and we are live on The People Speak on BBS Radio Network. And I am Sophia Ray, your hostess for this week. Join us every Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Central Time. The People Speak encourages audience participation during the show by calling in questions or comments toll-free in from Canada or the U.S. at 1-888-429-5471. Again, 1-888-429-5471. For more information on the People Speak radio show, you can log into bbsradio.com to Station 2. I'm excited to introduce our guest speaker, who is a community activist, inspirational guest speaker, a friend of mine. Damone Presley has a remarkable story from a criminal past to an activist lifestyle currently, and I am pleased to introduce him to you guys. Damone, how are you doing this evening?
I'm wonderful. How are you doing, Sophia?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Thank you. It's good to hear from you. It's good to have you on. I hope all is well.
Yes.
So let's give our audience, you know, an idea of who you are, where you come from. So give us, you know, a childhood background. How were you raised?
I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, the land of the lakes of 10,000 lakes, but pretty sure there's way more than 10,000. Born and raised in the Rondo community. I'm currently 44 years old, but the community I grew up in here in St. Paul, the Rondo neighborhood, community that was predominantly all African-Americans, solely ran businesses, corporations. It is a grassroots community that has a true history behind and with the community. The community I grew up in, our elders raised us. Proud son of two parents, Naida Presley and Dennis Presley Sr. Have just homegrown roots of a family history here in the community. Grew up within the church. I have a family history at Catholic United Memorial Methodist Church. So I have some Methodist in my background, spirituality. I was a young man growing up in the community. I grew up actually right across the street from a playground that's been in this community over 44 years of my life. It was there before I, could think or remember. And growing up in the community, here in the Rondo community, it was just a wonderful experience. I was very gifted and athletic growing up. My father was a professional boxer, so growing up as a young man, someone who was very engaged and active in being creative and a wealth of expression. And my mother, who has some nursing in her background, but has been a community activist. So I was really a social type young man growing up, very friendly, had a lot of friends, I would say, that I had been connected to or wanted to be connected to. I grew up very outspoken, even though folks don't know, but I guess I will share. We are on the air. I had a shy, sensitive side to me. You know, many people who do know of me, you know, I was a mama's boy. So, you know, I really had an understanding of both worlds when it came to female and male. And growing up, education was a must, you know, that was given to us and to be a part of us as we were growing up. You know, I can recall that, you know, what you knew is what you knew, but also willing to learn more and to be able to articulate, communicate, and exercise your beliefs and who you are and what you are. And I think that was how the community had raised us when we were younger, and my parents had the same values that instilled and I, myself, and my twin brother, Dennis Presley, and my sister, Andrea Presley. Pretty much.
So your father was a professional boxer. Your mother was in the health field. You had a pretty good support system, a family support system. So what point in your life did you turn to crime and drugs? How did that come about in your life?
Well, you know, I'd say in the mid-80s, you know, as many communities across the country of color were plagued with cocaine, which, you know, turned into an epidemic with the crack into the 90 era. So in my community, we had certain areas, I would say, that was plagued with some of these drugs and sassing. On the other side of my neighborhood where I grew up, there was a lot of prostitution on the Summit and University, Summit U area. And, you know, as I had stated earlier, I was one of those children that was very seek-watching. So, you know, as a young child, you know, a young man growing up, I was very eye-watching, I want to say. So as I adventured through my neighborhood and through my community, it was in various places or areas that I either had to come through the neighborhood or adventure through the neighborhood. And, you know, just looking at those things from where I am today, you know, I was curious, you know, as we know of many young children, though it's a different dynamic to the things that are happening with our youth today. But I was one of those youths that, you know, why not try? So it looked really engaging. It looked exciting. A lot of folks who were a little older than me, you know, I knew of and had seen some of these folks engaging in things that, you know, weren't right. But, you know, as a young child and a little naive and very adventurous, you know, I started to, you know, seek out what are they doing and what are these things going on? I'm seeing flashy cars. I'm seeing all types of jewelry and things of that nature. And, you know, as a young man, I had tried marijuana. You know, I even tried alcohol. And, you know, it seemed pretty cool, seemed pretty hip, even though I got sick in the early stages. But, you know, it seemed like this is what, you know, we do. You know, I want to say as far as where my mindset had got shifted, you know, from the values and the morals I was taught, you know, I found myself, you know, going astray and being rebellious and thinking, you know, this is what, you know, the enjoyment out of life. I want to say that, you know, it was a whole brain shift, you know, as far as, you know, the things that I had started out doing and things I was semi-accomplishing, you know, I was more into self-seeking and the unpopular as I look at it today, but I thought it was the popular thing to do because everybody else was doing it and I wasn't in the in crowd and I felt that I was on the outside and I wanted to be doing what everybody else was doing.
At you what know, point did you start selling, you know, and using? At what point in your life was that, like, when it just got really out of control?
I would say right around 16, you know, I could remember 16, around 1985, 86. I had been introduced to cocaine, and, you know, I'll never forget, you know, that was my first time, I would say, to a harsher drug, as, you know, that drug had been for me. And once I tried that, it was like a marriage that was waiting to happen. And through that experience and getting involved in that, my whole life just had shifted and changed. I, you know, started, you know, being involved with the law, started doing miscellaneous crimes, things of that nature.
Such as?
And I wasn't, such as just like little burglaries, little robberies, simple robberies, things of that nature. And I seen my whole attitude progress into somewhat more violent. You know, my attitude was more F the world, F everything, more like, you know, everyone owes me, you know. And I, to be honest, you know, some of that aggression, you know, was from when my parents had split. And it was right around that time when I turned 16. And I think that was some of my my anger that I was frustrated with. And that sadness and pain turned more into the love of using and doing the drug. And from there, you know, my life just started to tailspin to a downward effect.
So then you ended up, like, in and out of prison, so in felony. So you have a lot of felony. How many do you want to share your felony record, your prison, like, your prison experience? How often were you in and out, and how did that affect you, your family, your friends?
Well, when I turned 18, that was right away, you know, certification, which is legal age 18, but we see today in society kids are being certified at a much younger age, as low as 14 or 16. But as soon as I turned 18, I caught my first criminal charge where it was an adult felony, and that was simple robbery. And that was my first time that I was, you know, into that whole system arena. And I remember I had got 30 months, you know, and I had to do 20 months off that. And it never really dawned on me it was based and really behind the drug use. You know, I thought it was just, you know, hey, like I had said, a part of life. And I remember through that time, I really didn't take a look at anything. You know, I thought, you know, this was just a part of life. And I had got out and then developed this attitude that, you know, I'm not going to do the drug. I'm going to sell the drug, if you know what I mean. And I've seen many people be plagued by that ideal, which is one of the silliest ideals I had at a young age. But I engaged on the other side of instead of doing the drug, I was selling the drug. And that was way worse of an experience I had experienced. And off that, you know, my last incarceration, I did 8.5 years behind that mindset and really just degraded myself.
What landed you there for that long? What happened that put you in there for that long?
I was selling drugs. Mm-hmm. And I also I was selling drugs, and, you know, I had some a weapon you know. So that's what put me in that place for that long. And but let's just say, you know, the felonies I have is not one or two. So I'll just say that much, that I do have behind me.
So you're there. So how long had you been free from incarceration now since your last time?
9 years.
Wow, congratulations. And you're not going back, and right? Ever?
Never. Never.
Right. Never. So you kind of, you know, you had this, you know, this father who is a role model, a boxer, your mother that was, you know, in the health field, positive parents. You ended up, you know, going the wrong route to drugs, burglaries, whatever it was. You know, during your experience, you know, what was one of the worst things you did while you were high? I want to know. Just be honest with us. What was one of the worst things that you have done while you were high?
I would say making that choice to get high. That was the worst thing that I ever done. It's just making the choice to do drugs, period.
Absolutely, yes. So now, you know, now you turned your life completely around. You did a whole flip. Now, let's get into that a little bit. How did that come about? What was that awakening moment for you that you said, you know what, I'm done with this. I can't do it no more.
Well, when I did that last incarceration, them 8.5 years, you know, it started to dawn on me. I would say at that moment when I really was faced with that time, and then I got the time, and I remember 2 years into that sentence that I was sitting in my cell, and my dad used to always say, you know, ask yourself a question, you know, what are you going to do with your life? And really what had hit home, that my first incarceration, my mother always came and seen me, and, you know, pretty much, you know, has been my backbone. And I remember that it started to dawn on me that my mom had not came and seen me. And, you know, that really hit home for me. And just thinking about, you know, the love and support that was given from my mother and all the times and the things that I had done and been doing, that I had asked myself that question, you know, what am I going to do? And the first thing I had noticed that I had lacked education. And as I shared with you earlier, that education, you know, was something that was shared, given, and what I had seen my parents with degrees and, you know, the things that they have done instilled in us, and I had lacked that. So that was the first thing I began to address, that I dropped out of school in the 10th grade, and I needed to get my GED. And so I felt I was too far along. I was 24 at the time, and I was like, you know, I need to get my GED, and that was the start. So I got my GED, and from there I asked myself that question again, you know, what are you going to do with your life? You got your GED, what's next? And I remember that I began to take a look at, well, what I'm faced and the things in my past, you know, society doesn't accept people for a second chance. So I said, let me learn a trade. They really pretty much don't have any strikes against you with a trade, you know, and I can maybe utilize this. So I got into welding, and I have some welding certificate and whatnot. I know how to MIG, TIG, and wire feed. So I learned that skill. But I asked myself a little deeper question. Is this really what you want to do? And I began to think that, yeah, I like it. There is pretty good money in this field. But then, is this what I really want to do? So I started to soul search, and I looked back what my parents instilled in me. The things I've seen my parents do all my life was help the community, help other people, advocate, organize, and really speak out on issues that reflect and relate to people to make better changes. So upon asking myself and evaluating and looking at that, I said, I need to further my education. So I had got enrolled into college. And it was a blessing. It was an opportunity. And through prayer, I started to begin to work a relationship with my higher power, because I knew my source of strength not only would come from me and my family, but would come from within me, that had always been instilled in me, as I shared earlier in the show, that my grandma had instilled our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ in us, and was always a longstanding member, as she still is currently at 90 years old, still going to church. And I remember that as I was soul searching. And I got into college. I was 25 at this time. And upon taking college, I was blessed. I only had to pay $5 a semester. So there wasn't no bad things that came out of being locked up. And I think, you know, for me, and I believe for many others, if they take that opportunity and that's where they are, or that's where they end up, or that's where they're going, that prison is not just a bad place. It's not just for bad people, but it's for people that can get an opportunity to take a look at their life. And that's what I took that time that I had. And I remember through my second year of college, you know, that I had not been to school in over 15 years. And I stayed on the dean's list. I continued to excel with a 3.84. One semester, I got a 4.0, and I seen the things that were instilled in me when I was younger, that it was still in me. It was just a matter of bringing that out. And I remember the day that I graduated, I had asked myself again, well, what am I going to do with this education that I learned? And there was one thing that was left unsaid and undone that I finally figured out what I was going to do with my life. And I was going to start my own program. I looked at the things that was instilled in me that I had not continued to develop as my older years and came, and when the drugs came, all that had been suppressed and stopped. So I had in my mind a curriculum that some of the things that I could instill and help with others. So I began to utilize the education that I had learned. I began to utilize my experience, and I began to put together a program that I'm currently doing today called Vision and Living Life, Change is Possible. And I also created a 6-lesson curriculum. It's a Building Healthy Lifestyle program that works with youth, young adults, female and males, and it helps build resilience. It helps build communication skills. It helps folks be able to make decisions better than what the decisions they've been making. And that was the beginning of my process into my change.
That's powerful. You know, that message of your program is a very powerful one, and that communication building skills is, you know, a phenomenal idea, because I believe that communications, it's the basis to all relationships, you know, worldwide, and it's the source to, you know, everything that's living, because communication, without it, we wouldn't have efficient living styles or lifestyles. So that's very powerful and influential. But at this moment, we're going to take this time and we're going to cut into a break. And when we come back, we'll find more out about the program and more to come and questions from our listeners. And we'll be back in just a moment.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
Today's school libraries are filled with endless opportunities. With access to print and digital materials, the latest technologies, and the guidance of a school librarian, our children are empowered with the tools they need to succeed in school and beyond. I'm Julianne Moore. Join me in celebrating all of the ways that school libraries and librarians are transforming learning for our students. For more information on how you can become involved, Visit the American Association of School Librarians at aasl.org.
You're listening to BBS Radio. If it's not mainstream, it's on bbsradio.com.
With over 150 million registered users, Pal Talk is the largest video chat community in the world, with over 300 Pal Talk support staff speaking dozens of languages to help you enjoy your online experience. Meet new people across town or country or continent while chatting about your interests. Sing live karaoke, listen to music, join a lively political debate, or play group trivia in one of thousands of chat rooms in various categories from your PC, mobile, or tablet device. Joining Pal Talk is free and easy. Go to paltalk.com and become part of our friendly community today.
This land is yours.
Join us on The People Speak for an hour of live interviews and audience interaction as guests of various organizations share their work and strategies which impact our world and make a difference. That's The People Speak, every Tuesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Pacific, 9 to 10 p.m. Eastern, on the BBS Radio Network.
This land was made for you and me.
And we are back on The People Speak. This is your hostess, Sophia Ray, and we are live with Damone Presley. And Damone, let's go back into what you were saying prior to our break, which was about the youth program that you created. You were saying you created a curriculum, and what else can you share with us about that?
I do a lot of public speaking, too. Before I was actually able to start my program, I do have to give a few folks honor where it's due. Redis Fletcher had given me opportunity that he had some relationships with our St. Paul public schools. And it was a beginning for me when I had got out of prison in 2003 that he had introduced me to a teacher named Kathy O'Shaughnessy, and I really appreciate her very much. And she was at Johnson High School at the time, and she didn't know me from a can of paint. I didn't know her from a brush to a broom. And he said, you know, I'm going to give you this number. I spoke with her, brief introduction about you, and you take it from there, you know. So I do want to say, you know, for those listeners maybe who have some challenges in their past, and maybe are faced with some today, that all things are possible if you believe. And I truly believed in myself that if I just had an opportunity, that I would take it from there, and my faith and my higher power, which is God, that things would come to light. And I remember giving her a call, and I spoke to her real briefly. They had some students that were going through some difficult times, some situations, and she said, well, you know, would you like to come speak to these students? And that was history that was just beginning to where I am today. And I remember I went and spoke with that class, and it turned into another opportunity. I spoke to a class, turned into another opportunity. And from that relationship there, I was introduced to Jim Severance, which was the St. Paul Public School Program Director. And, you know, you walk by faith and not by sight. So there was a lunch meeting set. We began to sit down and talk. And he had asked me, he said, well, Damone, I'm hearing good things. And so much is being said about, you know, some of the topics and things that you had been sharing. And I do have to say, Sophia, it was all in my head, you know. And he had said, well, do you have a program? And I remember, you know, where I came from, but also, you know, how I had been living the word no had came out, but I had seen myself, recreated myself, and I stated yes. My daughter is sitting here, keeps saying, say her name, Nevaeh Presley, which is my daughter.
Is that Nevaeh?
Yeah, she's playing with the cat, and she keeps saying, Daddy, say my name. I have total 10 kids.
10 yes. kids, wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And one on the way. So I'm a proud father. You know, I have 4 daughters that's in college, doing well. I have 3 sons that are working. I have 4 grandchildren that I'm proud of. And I also have twins, and I am a twin. So God's been good to me, you know. I raised Nevaeh as a single father. Been raising her since the day she was born. That's been a big part of my life and my transition of where I am today. But get back to the story is that from that opportunity and through other opportunities, that's where we met along our path too as well. And it was just a blessing that all the people I had met, places I have gone, the places where I went, that I shared who I was. You know, I shared my struggles. I shared my downs, but I also shared that people can be lifted up. And that was one of the missions that me and my twin brother, because he was actually incarcerated with me at the time, and they had us in the same cell house. And I remember we had a conversation about really impacting, you know, others based off our own life experiences. As I shared before, many people were drawn to us and wanted to hang with us. And those friends that we grew up with are either in prison currently today, some are doing life sentences, some have been killed, and some are still out on the streets doing drugs. So we came up with that name together, Vision and Living Life, Change is Possible, because we do believe in change. And everybody in the world has a vision, and everybody is living life that are able to breathe today. And most of where I came from in the Rondo community, folks don't think change is possible. So that was one of the inspiring things behind the organization we created and started. And that those opportunities I have to give first and foremost to my mother, who is the executive director of an organization, Aurora St. Anthony Neighborhood Development Corporation, that she had done a partnership with the organization that helps women that get out of prostitution that have been prostituted against. And that organization is called Breaking Free. And the executive director for that organization is Vanita Carter. And she's the one who gave me my first employment job when it came to social work. And I was the first man that ever worked for an organization of such that does that type of work, where many men are the perpetrators to how women are being prostituted, raped, tortured, beaten, coerced, and forced to be in that lifestyle where we think in society that women are just making that choice. But we know drugs have a big problem or cause problem with women who are living that lifestyle. So I always give honor where it's doing. Then from there, it just really opened up doors. I came and spoke at their organization from a community voice, and she offered me a job the next day. And from there, Sophia, I haven't looked back. I've been fortunate and blessed to work for Aurora St. Anthony Neighborhood Development Corporation as a consultant, where I've been able to coordinate 2 of their programs currently today. And the opportunities, you know, you might look at, oh, well, that's your mother running that organization. But let me tell you, my mother or parents never gave any of their children a handout. You either got to work for it or you got to do what you know. And that opportunity was given through their Youth Count program, where my organization is in partnership. And here I am, you know. I'm not a saint, but I don't live that old lifestyle. I don't engage with that street activity. You know, I try to save and help folks who are in the struggle, because I understand the struggle. I've been in the struggle, and I know that there's a way out of the struggle. And it goes, as you were saying, just communicate. You know, I built what I have done and what I am today is just by communicating, letting people get to know who I am and taking away those perceptions and how society might devalue a person who's been through something, or as society has stigmatized people who have records of such that they shouldn't be deemable citizens. And I beg to differ. You know, I've been clean for the last 7 years. Next month, November 22nd, I will be clean from all mood altering substances. So that's another big accomplishment that I had to take a look at and ask myself a question. You know, are drugs my friend? Drugs ain't my friend. I mean, drugs will get me back to a life of crime. Drugs will take me away from my children. You know, drugs will take me away from my family. And most of all, it'll take me away from myself. You know, so I'm very proud about that. I do a lot of recovery work in the community, at our community hospitals, also at our community treatment centers here in the community.
When you say you do a lot of recovery work, I mean, what do you do precisely?
Well, I go out and speak about recovery. You know, I share the message of recovery that there is also change and it can be possible. You know, I talk about, you know, how my life was affected by drugs and how I had an opportunity to change my life around. I'm connected with an anonymous program. You know, I'm connected with a fellowship. I'm connected with a society of people who do not want to use drugs, and we meet regularly to help each other stay clean. You know, it's just been a beautiful experience, you know, of what I've been through, what I've gone through, and where I am today, that I am a believer that what had happened and what was happening was for the best for me, because without that, I wouldn't be able to see and know who I am today.
I want to get into some questions from our listeners at the moment. I got one from Herman in Maryland. Damone, do you realize that CIA brings drugs into our society from places like Colombia and Afghanistan? And what do you think about that question?
Yeah. Big shout out to Maryland. Go Terps. I want to say that, you know, here in this country, we don't produce those drugs, and that the drugs are coming from somewhere. And it's just a sad thing that has happened to our country here, and how the penalization behind those drugs, how it has ripped and tore through communities that we really are not the makers or those who, you know, produce these drugs. But yet here and still, our country has continued to bring these drugs.
Not just our country, but our government. Our government. You know, go ahead.
No, and that's where I was headed. You know, our government has always had hands in, you know, how drugs got to this country. They continue to be in that market. You know, I can recall, you know, and I'll share this since we're on the airway, from my understanding, you know, the Reagan era, the Bush era, you know, they were highly involved with Noriega. They were highly involved with some of the cartels. And I think it was ways and means that they wanted to decrease people of color from all nationalities that were making advances, were making changes, were making big headways as far as becoming mayors, becoming governors, becoming police chiefs, more black folks. More people of color were going to college in the early 80s. And it was systematically designed of how them drugs plagued and got to all the inner city. And I don't think that that's a secret anywhere here in America.
I agree. I got another question here. It's going to be a tailspin for you. This is kind of going to put a little flip into our conversation. This is from Frank in Missouri. Damone, are you familiar with the awakening going on regarding 9/11 truth and the pain that that event has caused worldwide?
Yes. You know, I mean, me personally, in my opinion, that, you know, that was designed. That was set up. You know, all in the name of oil, you know, and there goes the Bush administration, you know, their dealings and ties and trying to debo or force someone to give them something that, you know. And I was just having a conversation the other day with a family friend about that as well, is that, you know, we as America and our government tries to enforce our ways and take things from partnerships that they develop, from powers they put in place outside in Iraq and over in that country and whatnot, and then thereof when they were told that the dealings were done, and then go over there and kill those people. But when they retaliate in a way, and I do want to say, you know, I love Americans, you know, and the American lives that turned into casualties behind that then they were labeled as terrorists. Just like you labeled the Native American savages. Just like black people been raped, murdered, tortured, beaten, hanged, killed, and being in prison. And the same thing still continue. You know, you have the Spanish. You know, and how they did the Mexicans, and just, you know, with the border and all these things that have happened and continue to happen, and how our government interacts and they continue to bamboozle us through the media and put labels and titles on other people and not look at the truths that are going behind what our government has been doing.
So you think our government is terrorizing their own people, setting their own people up, bringing in drugs, setting up inside jobs? You know, there's a whole lot going on with the 9/11, I believe, other than oil. I don't believe it was oil. I believe it was ancient artifacts, and I also believe it was a cover-up to keep Dr. Stephen Greer from disclosing UFO, their whole alien agenda. There was a lot going on during that moment when 9/11 happened, because Dr. Stephen Greer was going to have mass media attention, and, you know, it was going to blow things wide open in the whole alien UFO agenda. And bam. That's when when the planes hit and took away his spotlight. So there was a whole lot going on there, and everybody wants to say oil, oil, oil. But do you think that, you know, our government are, you know, the world's terrorists here? Are we the bullies?
Well, we always have been. I mean, if we look at European history, I mean, if we look at the true barbaric, cannibalistic, mentality and behavior, yes, and I would agree with you on what you just shared, as far as, you know, and that's the diversion that America puts and continues to sell the American people. And we have those where we have socialism, we have economy, you know, I mean, a lot of things lead into being wealthy. You know, and they continue to segregate, you know, people, and it just doesn't lead down to one ethnic group. I'm talking about the people. You know, you have the powers to be, and the government continues to marginalize, monopolize, and use schemes and tactics to cause that diversion, again, where people are easily swayed or bought into what the media portrays, who's those who have the big bucks, big pockets that continue to make the decisions of the people who are really should and be the decision makers of how this country should be running. People like me and you, people who just called in, you know, who really, you know, want to see that everybody has a fair equity and full share to what should be doing given to them, you know.
Mm-hmm. What was one of, you know, let's go back to your experience and your turnaround, and what was your most memorable experience or memorable, you know, time during, at any point of time?
I would say, you know, of all the youth, and it's been up to 1,000, maybe more, and this really hits home, you know, who I am today and just, man, getting calls after years of some of the young people that I have met and or I see today and where they were heading with the decisions they were making. And I see where they're at today. They're going to college. They're finishing high school. They're working in the community. They're doing public policy work that I also engage in and creating and changing decisions that are being made for them, that they're at the table. You know, them are the most memorable highlights, you know, when I can see a young man that I had worked with years ago and he comes up and he says, "Mr. Presley, I really appreciate, you know, the things that you shared about yourself, that it helped me take a look at myself and that I don't have to be a statistic." You know, that's the most memorable moment I could say. And then outside of that, that really just means so much to me. Just seeing my mom.
Who inspired you the most?
I want to say, outside of my family, Frederick Douglass. You know, he has a quote that says, "Without struggle, there is no change." You know, and, and I want to say my mother, you know. My mother has really been a source of strength when I look back and I look at her currently and what she has done and what she's doing, you know, and just the impact that she's made on me, that perseverance, you know, holding things down when it doesn't look like there's a way, that there's always a way. Yeah.
If you could turn back time, what would you do differently?
Nothing. You know, I learned.
Amen. Amen.
I learned in my life that if I go back, nothing would have changed. You know, I'm a firm believer in my higher power, which is God. That there's a reason behind everything, and to go back and change it, you'll end up. Messing something up that I wouldn't be where I am today. And with that, I'm truly grateful. I wouldn't be on your show today. Me and you probably would have never met. You would have never had an opportunity to come across my path as well as I came across your path. I wouldn't be able to speak to the viewers that are listening right now. So there's a lot of things that I think our government society wants us to be in that mindset that if you could go back, if we could go back, we would have things the way that it should be, and it damn sure wouldn't be the way that it is now. So I would like to say that, if anything, I said before we go off the air.
Right now, what community events are you working on in your program, or, you know, anything that you want to share with us?
Yes. Well, currently, I'm doing a lot of public policy work. I do want to note that in the last 5 years, I really have gotten the youth that come through my organization to do some public policy work. So we've been addressing tobacco which is actually the number one leader of when it comes to illness, death, and a lot of communities, I would say, of color don't really know that. And if they do know that, it hasn't been a part of our discussions. You know, we're looking at homicide. We're looking at accidental death. We're looking at other things that the tobacco industry has really been targeting and marketing. You know, our communities, they have been getting away with killing our communities, and they are really out to get our youngsters involved in their products. And I found that that's a gateway to the illicit drugs. You know, the first thing I ever smoked was a cigarette first, and then it enticed me to other things. So I've been successful with the youth I've been working with throughout the last 5 years, and also I want to note a partnership with Answer Minnesota, the Ramsey Tobacco Coalition. So we've been working hard on getting the community here in St. Paul, Minnesota, to get these tobacco products, Little Cigarillo. They got all these flavored tobacco products. They got the window signing. So we've been successful so far with an increase on Little Cigarillos, Little Blunts. So there's a price increase here in St. Paul with these products that we found out youth were having access to. And we had, we're successful with a decrease in window signage in our windows over here because our stores were plagued with tobacco products, liquor products. So we today can see in our stores and it looks vibrant. It looks welcoming.
What steps are being taken to make these changes possible? How are you implicating this? Bringing them
well, up? We are educating our city council members. You know, I'm educating and training our youngsters, you know, about this issue. We have currently about 50 tobacco advocates that are under the age of 16 that are out in the community at various community events that we have in St. Paul and Minneapolis, and our youth are able to talk about these issues. We're flying, we're outdoor knocking, and we're currently working on a new city ordinance around flavored tobacco, where we're trying to get those products out of our convenient and corner stores and only to be sold in tobacco shops only. You know, and it's not to say people can't make that choice, but we want to say that it's not right for our children to be able to be plagued with these products in the stores that are right in line of where the candy products that these kids go. You know, you got tobacco products that are bubblegum, fruit loops, mm-hmm. and just all this crazy nonsense that continues to plague our community. And then outside of that, I'm coordinating a program called FRAN, Fall Time Roundel Action Network. And this program here works with our residents. It's a collaboration of local and public agencies. We're building leadership with our residents. We're connecting our residents with organizers and able to bring up issues that relate to them, that deal with them within their community, that they're sharing their voices, saying enough's enough, you know, and they're making changes. We were successful of getting swimming vouchers, getting access to our park and rec centers when it comes to programming and activities that where families are not able to engage in due to price. Most of our families are making under $10,000. They're not making medium income, you know. So that's one of the several projects and stuff that I'm doing.
We are coming to the close end of our show. Is there any last inspirational messages that you want to leave our listeners with? You know, maybe something that individuals that may be going through an experience that you went through, what would you say to them?
I would like to say that, you know, sky is the limit, you know, and don't limit, you know, to what you're doing, that you can come out of any situation. If you depend on the government, you depend on the system, you'll continue to be within that prison and not be able to succeed or excel outside of already the barriers that are set. I want to say keep hope alive. You know, what you have dreamed, walk it out. Don't just dream and wake up and just be a dream, but go after that dream, you know. Nothing can hold us back. I believe we are resilient, strong people all across this country, from all faith, all backgrounds, all walk of life, you know. I'll leave this with you, is that whatever is possible, it can be done. And if you are a firm believer in making the changes that you need to make, that it will be done. You know, I couldn't sleep, you know, for many nights. But today I can sleep very peaceful and sound that I'm doing my best, I'm trying my best, and the best is yet to come, because I don't want to sleep and not be able to get up unless I'm going to see my Lord and Savior. So with that, I really appreciate you, Sophia. I really appreciate the folks out in California that have given folks like me an opportunity to share. And Nevada wants to say something to the listeners, too. She wants to tell you guys bye and God bless.
Okay.
Bye.
Hi, Nevada.
And there you have it.
Oh. What a sweetheart. You know, I appreciate you, Damone. God bless you, too. Thank you for, you know, taking this time to being on the People Speak this evening. I want to thank our listeners. A big thanks to Doug Newsom, our engineer, and our producer, Mike Kim. Join us next Tuesday for another show on the People Speak Radio. You can also catch us on bbsradionetwork.com. And everybody, let us unite through love and light. Be good to one another, and good night.
One bright sunny morning, in the shadow of the steeple, by the relief of us, I saw my people. And they stood there hungry, and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me.